Welcome to No Bullshit News Hour, the immigration special. Let me remind everybody, this is a podcast where we do work. We don't just blah, blah, blah. We do work. So while the press and the politicians bicker whether to re-import an MS-13 gang member so he might be redeported properly, nobody's talking about the more serious threat in Dearborn. Issam Bazzi, a man designated as a known or suspected terrorist, is living near a KFC, allowed to walk around and do as he pleases. According to highly sensitive documents provided to me by a frustrated member of the intelligence community, the Biden administration knowingly released Bazzi into the interior in December 2021 after he was caught with his wife and daughter waiting across the Rio Grande. This despite the fact that Bazzi was a positive hit on the FBI's terror watch list. Let me say it again. A positive hit on the terror watch list. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement detained Bazzi as a serious threat, as they should have, and they sent the file to the FBI. And the FBI advised ICE that Bazzi be held because he was a flight risk. Nevertheless, somebody in Washington overrode the FBI's instructions and ordered Bazzi released because he was, wait for it, chubby, overweight, susceptible to COVID, according to those documents. Bazzi's case was the first public acknowledgement ever that a person on the terror watch list had ever knowingly been granted entry into the country. As a rule, migrants on that list attempting to enter the U.S. are detained, interrogated, then deported. There's your due process. But that didn't happen to Bazzi. In fact, Bazzi had applied for a visa under the Trump's first administration in 2019, but was denied after screening revealed that he was a, quote now, category 5 group member of an unspecified terror organization with, quote, substantive high side derogatory information, unquote. Under the Biden border free-for-all, however, Bazzi and 98 others on that list were granted entry and given bus and airplane tickets to their destinations of preference. And since then, 4 known or suspected terrorists let in the country on that list have successfully registered for Medicaid. Not much is known about Bazzi. He's 54 and was born in Lebanon and fled to Venezuela in the early 90s in the wake of the violence there. Bazzi is plump and has poor manners, and never thanked me for the housewarming gift I brought him back in 2022, a floral arrangement from a dead man's wake. In light of the hand-wringing over Kilmar Obrega Garcia, the human trafficking, tattooed gangbanger from El Salvador, there's no question about that. I thought it's time to check up on Bazzi's status. An old woman at the Dearborn house, where Bazzi supposedly stays, said Bazzi does live there, but was away at work. Biden granted all the Venezuelans temporary protective status and they get to work. A guy in the terror watch list gets to work, can apply for Medicaid and walk around. But here's what I found about Bazzi. From congressional sources, this is as shocking as it is confounding. Last month, Joseph Humire, an international terrorism expert, testified before the House Oversight Committee and specifically detailed Bazzi's case. While Bazzi's Dearborn's relatives described him to me as a mild-mannered former clothing store owner, Humire says there's something more sinister at play. And let me quote his testimony. Quote, review of corporate records and interviews in Venezuela reveal that Bazzi is far from a modest immigrant seeking asylum in the U.S. and has close ties to high-ranking members of the Venezuelan government. He goes on, in Venezuela, Bazzi is known for his business activities on Margarita Island. On the island, he owned luxury apartments, yachts, and helped finance a commercial building with ties to the Venezuelan government. Bazzi maintained close connections to senior figures in the Maduro regime, notably the family of Tarek El Asami, the former vice president and minister of petroleum, who's accused of corruption, money laundering, with alleged ties to Hezbollah, and is on ICE's most wanted list. Only weeks prior to making his trip to the U.S. southwest border, Bazzi reportedly attended the funeral of relatives of Tarek El Asami. Bazzi's profile, writes Humire, fits more as a logistical financier rather than a potential asylum seeker. What in the world? We got a fucking potential Tony Montana over here. Why is this guy allegedly affiliated with an international drug smuggling and terror cartel allowed to live among us? Maybe Bozzy's a deep state asset. But if that's true, then why doesn't the rest of the deep state not know? And if they need help finding him, they can just let me know. I can take you to his front door. It's just down the street from the KFC. Now, today on the show, so you can be educated about immigration and voting and what's going on, you need to be educated. So I brought in the experts. We have Todd Benzman. If you watch the show, you know him. He's the National Security Fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies. He wrote this book, Overrun. It's the only one. It is a classic. It's an easy read, and it's historic because nobody else did the freaking work. And we have Michigan State Representative Brian Posthumus, right? Posthumus. He is the sponsor of legislation making its way through the state House that codifies voting for citizens only. So they'll be joining us. But first, though, as I promised, here's the world premiere of the Terrorist Among Us, allegedly. He's not here now? Is he working?
Yeah.
Is he allowed to work?
I don't know.
Terror watch list. He's working. I found out the Border Patrol caught a man and his family sneaking in over the Texas border last November. His name is Hassan Bazzi. He's listed on the terrorist watch list as a high classified, known, or suspected terrorist. Anyhow, they let him in anyway. He's living here in Dearborn. I even brought Mr. Bazzi a housewarming gift. It's a plant from a dead man's wake. Now, I don't know much about the man except he's got no manners. I mean, he never thanked me for the plant I left on his porch. Coming here for a year and a half now. No sign of the guy. He's on the f***ing terror watch list. This is his brother. Well, is he living with you?
Yeah.
I've been coming over the months and nobody ever answers the door.
You came last time and you put the flower on the door.
Oh, did you get that?
Yeah, I get that. I don't like that.
It was a gift.
It's not a gift. That's a funeral. You know, it's not a terrorist. I don't know why you keep saying it's a terrorist.
Well, it's the government documents. It's not me. It's the FBI. It's Homeland Security. Is your brother working? We're going into year four of this guy in our country, and now there's a clearer picture of why this guy's on the terrorist watch list. Bazzi was a wealthy man back in Venezuela with yachts and luxury condos. According to congressional testimony, he has ties to Venezuela's former vice president, Tariq El-Assami, who has alleged ties to Hezbollah and who is on ICE's 10 most wanted list for smuggling in tons of narcotics into the United States. A week before he jumped the Rio Grande, Bazzi attended an El-Assami family funeral. So you figured he'd like the plants I left. Señor Bazzi. Es Carlitos Leduff, el periodista. Yo quiero hablar contigo. Tú eres un terrorista, señor. Señor Bazzi. Then we saw an old lady pop out the side door. Ma'am, I'm looking for Hassan Bazzi.
Hassan Bazzi?
Yes.
He's not here.
He's not here? Is he working?
Yeah.
Is he allowed to work?
I don't know.
Is there a way I can get a hold of him?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know how it
is. So he's still in the country?
Yeah.
Is he still in the country? I'll take that as a yes. So to review, he wades in across the Rio 3 years ago, a hit on the terror watch list. Nobody seems to know where he's at or if he went to immigration court, and he's working.
That's the new America. Bienvenidos.
Ooh, she left the gate open. I'll just close that. Don't want anybody sneaking in.
Live from downtown Detroit, it's the No Bullshit News Hour with my main man, Charlie LaDuff and Karen Dubitz.
This is just breaking news. Dub or bullshit? Dub or bullshit?
Yeah, we're gonna have Tucker Carlson on next week, and we're gonna talk about the economy, gold, stock market. In the meantime, just remember something: the politicians lie to you, the media lies to you. How do you know if your investment statements are lying to you? Remember, you're not managing your wealth. That's some unseen guy jockeying an algorithm. Volatility is what makes him his money. He's not looking out for you. He's up and he's down. But you should know your money man, who will look out for you and fashion a financial plan for your future. That's financial specialist Luke Nowacki at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Tailor a financial plan from annuities to retirement accounts to college savings. He'll keep you up to date. And always, you can just reach him by phone. That's what your money man should be, not some flyer in an envelope. True. Oh, this is what you lost this month. Let Luke Nowacki worry so you don't have to. Luke Nowacki at 248-663-4748. Now, I want to bring in Todd Benzman, the National Security Fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies, author of this very fine book, Overrun. Great blurb on the back from me. My blurb comes before Tom Holman's blurb. All right? Just let you know that. Right? Mine's in red.
You want to tell us what it says?
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you do that?
Let me read that. Quote, the U.S.-Mexico border is an opaque landscape populated with human traffickers, international terror suspects, migrant children, and American law enforcement agents. No one truly understands how it all intersects. With boots on the ground, Benzman paints a portrait that is as thrilling as it is outrageous. Written with a sharp pen, this is a must-read for anyone trying to understand one of the most important issues of our time. Welcome in, Todd Benzman.
Thanks. That was pure poetry. That was poetry.
I didn't even get nothing for it. So we first met Todd and I. Todd, because he's always looking, read about my first story on Bozzy, and then he picked up on it, and that's when it gets to Washington. Todd, that's the update. What do you make of this? This is the first guy ever known to be let in on the terror watch list.
I mean, there's a new sheriff in town, so if he's still free, my first thought is that they haven't gotten to him yet. They've got plenty of on their plate. Or, like you said, maybe he's a witness of some kind, or he's a source, or he's helping the government in some way. Otherwise, it's just incompetence and dangerous incompetence. Or purposeful incompetence under the Biden administration. I have to figure that if he's not a witness of some sort working with our government, that it's just a matter of time before the Trump administration catches up with him and does what they're supposed to do.
But I've never... why would they just let him roam around and do as he pleases? That's not sort of the confidential international man of intrigue, what you do with him, right?
Doesn't make sense. How does that happen?
I mean, you never know. The CIA does, they operate in their own ways, you know. They do things and they cut deals. I don't know. It's pure speculation, but, you know, that's a great story and it's a great question to follow, and we have to keep following it.
Okay, we'll leave that to
bring
you.
Bring more flowers.
Yeah. Did you want to ask him something?
No. I think what he said earlier was like it's almost intentional or deliberate oversight of this, because there's no way for that period of time that this should go unnoticed under anybody's watch. So there has to be some deliberate an active over ignoring this, or, you know, dismissal of the guy's presence here. I just don't see it not being on anybody's radar.
Well,
I wonder, it's probably time for me to write that up again. And,
there you
and
go,
pose
Todd.
The question. Yeah,
quote me,
yeah,
duly, okay?
I'm
quote
over,
me.
Dude.
Don't be like everybody else out there, just stealing material. Here's
I
the thing,
always
though.
Quote you.
Thank
I always
you.
Give you credit for breaking that story. Always.
Yeah, I went back and reread that, and you're like, if it's true, And nobody says it isn't. I mean, that's not a real, you know, buck up here. I just really hyped your book, and you're writing, if it's true, it's true. Now, here's the thing. If he is an asset, I just told everybody, this is the cascading effect. You're detained, you're interrogated, and you're out. What more, after, like, we're going into year four, what more could this guy possibly be giving the deep state that he couldn't already give? Because the vice president, Al-Assami, big corrupt guy, right? Allegedly, he's on the top 10 list. But the Maduro regime arrested him. He's in Venezuela. He's the vice president, and the president had him arrested for corruption. So what more can be known? Todd.
I don't know. I mean, he took a trip down there. So, you know, anytime you have new interaction with key people, there's material to be shared with our intelligence services. Purely speculative. I have no clue whether that's what's happening. It's like, what else could it be? I mean, under Biden, you could kind of make a case for, I mean, even when Biden, when they accidentally released a whole bunch of people on the terror watch list, I've reported elaborately about each one of them, at least seven or eight. And then the House Homeland Security came in and did a report saying that they accidentally released 99 into the country. But at least they made some effort to reel them back in. They'd have these crazy panicked manhunts going on to go catch the guy that they accidentally released because there was so much chaos happening down at the border. So, but in this case, they didn't reel him back in. And it's been, what'd you say, 3 years now?
Yeah.
So I, you know, what else could it be? I don't know. I mean,
I think that's really important. Questions. I think that's important because they got caught. They ran around with their heads caught off, tried to sweep these guys up, but not our guy, the one guy, the first guy, the guy that a think tank goes down to Venezuela, digs him up, and he's really the only specific character on this list that was included in his testimony. So everybody in the world that's looking at this knows how serious it is, and we're left unaware. Our senator, who was in the CIA, doesn't want to return a call, right? We've got Congress people looking into it for us. ICE won't answer them, and we want a fucking answer. Now, the border's all but shut down. 99.9% of the traffic is gone, right? We now, we're on track for this year to encounter 90,000 people illegally, right? About 90,000. If you remember at the height of the Biden free-for-all, that was the amount of traffic we had in a week. 1 week versus 1 year. Now, Todd, why? What happened?
And I also want to point out, because 99,000 or 100,000 sounds like a whole lot, but remember that 100% of them are being detained and deported right away. None of them get in to stay in, number one. Just keep that in mind when you talk about the 100,000. A bunch of policies. It took about an hour to close the border down. I think I've been on your podcast before saying it would take an hour to shut the whole thing down. This is not a complicated, we don't need a big Senate bill. Like Kamala Harris was always saying, we don't need comprehensive immigration reform. We don't need anything except the tools that are already in the back shed. And that's what they did. They came out and they, Trump came in and said, we're going to hunt and capture you, and we're not going to release you into the country. You are going to be instead detained and promptly deported with no chance to claim asylum. And that's what they did. And
so that because spread, what that does to people, correct me if I'm wrong, you got the boots on the ground there. It's now, in order to cross the Rio, the cartels are, it was 500 bucks, $1,000. It's now $4,000. $4,000 just to go across. And so if Trump's grabbing you and pushing you right back into Mexico, who wants to spend their $4,000?
You can't. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Tom?
This. All mass migration boils down to that financial calculus, period. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. If you're getting in, if you know you're going to be let in, you're going to drop the cash on the green gambling table felt, right? If you're going to get deported, 90 to 100% probability deported, you're not spending the cash. It's just that simple.
Okay, so what we got now is military presence. The Army, the Marines, the National Guard are down there. It goes from San Ysidro, basically San Diego, all the way to El Paso, right? There's a strip 60 feet wide and that long, right? About 1,300 miles. That's called the Roosevelt Reservation. And that's now been made into a military base, right, Todd?
That's right. And importantly about that is those troops that are going to be patrolling that will have the authority to detain illegal immigrants and turn them over to ICE. They're no longer just, you know, with binoculars out there and working their surveillance equipment and calling them. They can actually detain them, including drug traffickers, too. So that really force multiplies the whole situation. Now, remember, the policies are hugely important. To detain and deport is the key to everything. But the cartels are notoriously adaptive. And if you start to let any number into the country, then you're going to have a rush on the border again. So you have to mash the gas all the time. You have to keep the gas pedal to the metal, no brakes ever. So, you know, you hear people say, well, God, there's nobody coming across. Why are you doing military stuff? Why are you having all these people down there? It's because of that. You have to nonstop have a cordon in place that is hunting and capturing everybody they can lay hands on and deporting them. That's how you have a secure border. They're at like 230 a day apprehended. That's unbelievable. I think we have never had numbers that low. We're on track to have the lowest number of attempted border crossings in U.S. history. And it took the first day of the Trump administration to do that, which is just a remarkable achievement. I mean, I don't want to blow smoke up anybody's ass about that, but I was down there for 4 years when it was just nothing but mad chaos, like a kicked anthill all the time, every time I went down there. And I went down there just a couple of weeks ago, and it was dead. There was nothing happening. I was on the Mexican side interviewing the immigrants that got trapped behind the Trump wall. And, you know, they told me, we're not spending the money. We're going to get caught. Why would we spend the money? We're going home.
Well, there's
We're staying in Mexico.
There's another thing. Since you're here, let me ask and get it clear so everybody's kind of understanding, like, you know, who I get an education from. Maybe I shouldn't have brought Todd on. Like, explain this to me, Todd. You can still come through the port of entry. Like, you can, you know, you're in Tijuana and you walk across the bridge and you can go to the immigration office and say, I'm claiming asylum. What? That's not happening because they're not getting in either, asylees, because what is it? Immigration and Naturalization Law, Section 212F, where the president can say, not at all, we're not taking anybody. Is that right?
That's right.
Really?
They've always had that tool. They've always had that tool in the shed.
Explain it intelligently, because I'm a redneck and I mumble. What is 212F?
Google it. But I'll tell you, but anybody can Google it. It's really short.
I told you I'm a redneck. The phone's cracked, bro.
I'm talking to your audience here.
What audience?
Immigration and Nationality Act 212F gives the president complete whimsical power to deny asylum to 100% of anybody just because they feel like it. There's nothing more or less to it. And it's been litigated. There's been some court rulings, and Trump's just saying we're doing 212F. Go look up his very first executive order on inauguration day, issued this order about, you know, stop the invasion or something like that. Something a little bit hyperbolic. But there it is right there. We're going to be using 212F. There you go.
So the lack of control during the Biden administration was just a lack of willingness to act. I mean, you know, we talked to
Chris?
Yeah.
Border Patrol?
And Border Patrol in terms of just a lack of process at the time. And so everybody was talking about there needs to be a process. There needs to be things in place that, you know, will allow these people to come through that can come through. But at the end of the day, now it's just flicking the switch and nobody's coming through. So that tool was already available.
And they're not, like, oh, it's been broken for decades. And they were talking about parole, right? Everybody's being... Here's where parole comes from. It was only for asylum seekers. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a refugee. I'm asking for asylum. Okay, you're being detained. You're being held until you get in front of a judge. The parole was for individuals. Like, I'm having heart palpitations. I got to go to the hospital. So they would parole you so you could be taken to a hospital. Once you're done with the hospital, you come back. They came up with this novel, no matter who we encounter, parole, go.
But just like the question around Bozzy, why? I mean, at some point you'd have to sit back and ask why? Why wasn't that or something else used to garner some type of control in terms of the flow of people coming over here? I mean, so the question—
I have an answer for that.
Great.
Yeah, so first of all, I'll just say chapter 4 of Overrun is like 10,000 words. So if you ever have a couple of Sunday afternoons, but the short version of that is that this was not incompetence, and it wasn't, that the Biden administration just curled up into a fetal position because they had no control over these waves of humanity. They did this on purpose. And it was incredibly well engineered and beautifully executed. If I do say so, I'm going to give them credit for that. It was like the best piece of government work I've ever seen. It was so well done. The way they systematically dismantled the using regulations and internal memoranda orders to the border agencies to back off of the requirements to detain and deport. And to use parole and to use all these other ways to just catch and release millions and millions of people into the interior. Why would they do that on purpose? My explanation for that is that it was ideological and driven by profit motivation. Ideological in the sense that the people that Biden owed his presidency to were on the very far progressive left of the American political spectrum. Think the Bernie Sanders guys, the supporters, right? And they have an ideology that holds that borders are immoral and evil and akin to slavery. And they regard themselves as abolitionists, modern day abolitionists, but for economic migrants. And they have an ideology that says that we have to dismantle the Jim Crow laws. We have to dismantle the slavery laws. We have to dismantle all of this stuff. They all were put in as political appointees in all of the key agencies, the Domestic Policy Council, DHS, all the component agencies, etc. And they are the ones that engineered this. They were given the immigration border portfolio, and they did this. Now, why would they do that beyond ideology? Because the vast majority of those political appointees came from non-governmental organizations, NGOs, not think tanks like the one I work for, which is the typical source of political appointees, but from non-governmental, non-profit groups that are advocates for immigrants and refugees. So the more of those people that are brought in, the more money they're given in grants, federal grants and contracts.
USAID.
That is exact. USAID was a conduit for a lot of the State Department money. There was no daylight at all between State Department and USAID and billions of dollars in grant money that went to those NGOs abroad, but also State Department money and FEMA money going to NGOs on this side of the border too. So on both sides of the border, they were getting unprecedented billions and billions of dollars that have still not even been accounted for. The numbers are so vast, wow. but billions of dollars. And so all of those people, I'm thinking, left government service at the end of the Biden term and went in for 6 and 7 figures salaries at these NGOs again.
And we're left with
the wreckage. That's what happened.
And we're left with the wreckage.
Yeah, remember,
because, go ahead, Todd.
Remember, Eisenhower, I'll put a final period on this, but Eisenhower, just before he left, warned about the military-industrial complex ever getting a hold of foreign policy because we would be forever at war. Those are the guys that are making all the bombs and bullets, aircraft carriers for war. Do not let them have access to our foreign policy. Well, that's what happened in this case. The NGOs got access to our immigration policy, and they did what Eisenhower warned us about. That's what happened here.
Yeah. You know, it just triggered something here. Bringing it back to Bozzy. When military members were being dismissed, people were being fired because they wouldn't get the vaccination. The illegals weren't required to get one. Bozzy, they were afraid he's going to get COVID. He was never required to get the vaccine. And, you know, Todd, it triggered it because a thought here, when he talked about the military, because no matter if you're a citizen or not, if you're a man, 18 to 25, regardless of your status, you're supposed to register for the draft. Are we requiring these fuckers, this MS-13 fucker, to enlist or, you know, go to Selective Services and register? Are we? It's a joke. Who's not for immigration? Controlled immigration, vetted immigration. That's what we're looking for. There's no hate going on. You turn this shit upside down, you got terrorists on Medicaid. Tens, hundreds of billions missing. When we don't have the dough, we live in Michigan, man. You know, it's going like this, going down. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm hearing this, Todd. Tell me what your sources tell you. We got to work through the legal stuff, but there's a huge bill, right, up on the Hill. Maybe how much is going to be appropriated for border and immigration? $100 billion, $200
billion? A lot. More than in history.
Really? So we're going to see a ramping up, not in your opinion, or is this shit going to slog through the courts?
It's going to slog through the courts, no doubt, but that was anticipated and planned for by the administration. I mean, they came out. I mean, they were in the New York Times, big front page. You know, they had battalions of lawyers already gearing up before Inauguration Day, ready to go to town. So no surprise there. But you have not seen the start of the deportations yet. This, what you've seen so far is a little bit dog and pony, and it's good that they've gotten 150,000 criminal aliens either deported or in detention. But once that $170 billion is finally appropriated and starts showing up in the piggy bank, probably around July, August, then you're going to start seeing detention facilities spring up all across the country. You're going to start seeing more ICE officers, more police, regular police involved, and task forces all across the country in the interior.
Let me stop you there. Forget about the border. Okay. Yeah. So just real quickly, what is the rule, the law about being 100 miles from the international border? What does that give the federal authorities the right to do? If you're within 100 miles of it, go ahead.
Yeah, when you're within 100 miles and you're at the border zone, we can put you through something called expedited removal, which is what it sounds like, fast, quick, under Title 8. We don't have to give you asylum or anything else, but within the interior of the country, and the courts are all ruling this now, you're seeing these rulings come out, just reinforcing other rulings, that they're entitled to due processes, meaning they can do a defensive asylum claim, they can ask for protection under the Convention against Torture, they can ask for withholding of removal, they can challenge their deportation orders and drag those out into court. So it's not as fast as it can be at the border. And that's what we're seeing now. You're seeing
the numbers start to drag down. Within 100 miles of the border, the federal authorities have the right to stop you for no reason and ask you for your identification, correct?
Yeah, there's the bar is a little bit lower down near the border.
Let me make the point. It's simple. Almost all of Michigan is within 100 miles of an international border. So if we're going to start sweeping, we've got very bad dudes here. We're getting Mara Salvatrucha, Tang de Aragua. We're getting them all here, assassins. So if that's the case, get ready for it, right? Because it was weird to me being like in Texas the first time and going, the fuck is this? I'm going to show you shit. Yeah, you do, son.
But let's go back to the $160 billion that was being allocated.
I think you said 170.
Oh, I'm sorry, 170. Who's going to benefit from that? I mean, you talked about Biden's political allies benefiting from the process or lack thereof during his tenure. Somebody's going to be on the side of benefiting from that as well. Who is that?
That's a great question. Yeah, Karen, that's a great question.
And that's why she's here.
You're right. There are going to be beneficiaries of that. They're going to be the private prison industry. They're going to be contracting with private detention centers. They're going to make the money on this. Now, remember, under Biden, all those contracts were canceled one after another and the detention facilities closed. But you can't do large scale deportations without bed space. And already they're popping at the seams with the existing infrastructure. So the quickest, easiest way is to flood that zone with money. And that's who's going to benefit, mainly them. And you're going to have private, you're going to have a lot of data management outsourcing as well. Companies that help DHS figure out how to track people's cell phones, for example, and how to do patterns of life so that they can figure out how to interdict a wanted person. So there's going to be data management industry money to be made as well.
Okay, let me localize it for a second, you know, for Michigan people. They're going to be a big sweep. It's coming. You heard it. This guy knows the ground game. While we haven't built those facilities yet, we're going to need temporary facilities. And one idea being floated, and it's definitely being floated, is in Michigan, one of those detention areas temporarily would be Selfridge Air Force Base. Have you heard that, Todd?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yes, I have.
So there you go, Macomb. Just a little bit of news for you. I would suggest the media get off their ass and start doing some work, because I'm sure people in Macomb County have some feelings about that. And we're all entitled to it. Right, Mark?
Yeah.
Did that, all of a sudden your brow furrowed there like, whoa.
Oh, it's, yeah. That's pretty amazing.
It's breaking news.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay, and finally, Todd, the last one. Again, for people of Michigan, actually people in any state, there's something called 287G. Is that part of the Immigration and Nationalization Act, Todd? 287G?
Yes, it is.
287G allows law enforcement jurisdictions to be deputized by ICE. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the sanctuary city thing. Well, Jackson County just did it. We've been deputized, and we are going to work with ICE, hand over people to ICE. This now becomes a question for the states, right? Florida's done it. Texas is discussing it. Now you're going to have sanctuary states versus non-sanctuary states. And if they're non-sanctuary states, right? Like, tough on this. Where do you think everybody's going to go? To the place where they're not going to get picked up. So Michigan's got to decide if that's what we want. Right, Todd?
Right. Remember, so 287G is an affiliated authorities. It's not strictly 287G is often just about, you know, jailers and prisons and sheriffs and police holding facilities and that sort of thing. But there's a spinoff to it that allows the federal government to deputize and certify county constables regular police, just cops, patrolmen to arrest immigrants, illegal immigrants, and turn them over to ICE. So if you want to do mass deportations, remember there's only 5,000 or 6,000 ICE agents available right now just to do what they're doing. They're gang pressing DEA agents into that, and IRS agents, and anybody who's got a badge and a gun are getting gang pressed into this in blue states, especially. In red states, they're using state police. But in blue states, they're going to have a problem because the politics are to leave them alone. You know, they're fine. We want them. We're welcoming. We're sanctuary. So they're not probably going to get cooperation from most police agencies to certify, to and then to actually use their resources to arrest illegal aliens.
I'm just gaming this out there. And we're going to bring in after the break here, Representative Brian Postumus. I smell something brewing here, like at the state capitol. Like, is somebody going to introduce legislation that all of our law enforcement agencies must be sanctuary? You know what I mean? I smell that coming. I really do.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, you're seeing state laws pass, like Florida just passed a statewide law requiring every single man jack who's got a badge and a gun and is a commissioned officer to certify for this program and start arresting illegal aliens. And you've got laws like that being contemplated in Texas right now, here in Austin, where I am, and in a lot of different states. And the Trump administration is going to be trying to leverage all the states to do this in the coming year or so.
All right. Hey, Todd, that was really illuminating. We're really illuminating, yeah. Dude. Thanks for being on and, you know, hipping everybody to what's happening.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And don't
keep
forget
doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Don't forget, you know, call me up. I'll give you the Bozzy stuff if you need it. Because, you know, your megaphone's a little bit bigger.
I think it's time. Oh, I don't know about that. But, yeah.
Okay. Thanks, man. Okay. So let me tell you about Archangel Senior Management. Are you a caregiver with a true heart and character but feel underappreciated in a dead-end job? Then consider contacting Archangel Senior Management. They offer a solution and a vision to working in cold corporate senior living facilities. Archangel offers a career in small communal homes with a pathway to ownership. Partner with the PES School of Nursing and Majestic Residences, Archangel will train and develop dedicated caregivers into fully qualified home directors whose first priority is always our seniors. When a new graduate earns their wings, they're partnered with principled investors who prioritize people over profits. The collaboration between caregiver and investor makes both common sense and business sense. Archangel creates intimate senior households in our own neighborhoods. Families know the care is genuine, the owners are local, and if you're interested in a career instead of a job, contact Archangel at 989-614-0416. And I would just quickly say, I am the maintenance man at American Coney Island. That is the geographic and cultural center of Detroit, is it not?
Yes, it is.
It really, I'm writing a little magazine story about being the maintenance guy here.
But it all comes together. I mean, right in the heart of the city of Detroit, right in the heart of downtown. I mean, you can sit in that window and see everything, a cross-section of people, challenges, successes,
clean,
everything.
Delicious, nutritious.
And the bathroom is clean.
I eat there, and look at that.
And the napkin dispensers and the condiment dispensers. Now, when you go to a restaurant like a Coney or, you know, casual restaurant, and those things are clean, then you know the restaurant is clean.
Now, you know, you don't make friends with salads, but they don't get enough credit for the salad here. Like, the tomatoes are ripe. They're delicious. The lettuce is crisp. The olives still have pits. I mean, you put a little Euro meat on that thing. Ooh.
I'm a fan of the French fries. Now, everybody talks about McDonald's fries. Yeah. They fry them just a little. I'm a fan of the fries.
Oh, there's a secret menu?
Is there? And what is that?
I can't tell you. It's secret. Well, you can get the 5 hundo.
And what is that?
The 5 hundo, it was a bunch of big rollers in Vegas, because I got a store in Vegas, and the big rollers wanted a double Coney, two dogs inside of one. So that's the 500. You come in here and ask for the 500.
That's too much for me to eat. I can't do that.
I know, but you're not a baller. You know what I'm saying?
I guess not. I'm having to eat two hot dogs.
Okay, now, hey, we forgot Bernie.
No, we didn't.
Well, you know, when it rains, the power goes out. And when the power goes out, the internet goes out. When the internet goes out, I call my friend Matt and Bernie at XG Service Group. Look at Bernie here on his hands and knees, giving it everything he's got. Look at that man crack. So busy. He forgot to wear a belt. There's Matt right there getting the board together. That's 734-245-4100. If you need Matt and Bernie to come take care of your voiceover internet, your security cameras, off-campus access control, Wi-Fi, and cameras for homes and business, they'll design it for you. You got restaurants, they do drive-through systems, railroad cameras for public safety, total wireless camera systems for your home and business. Yeah, that's right. Call XG Services at 734-245-4100. Oh, really? Somebody's political gossip in the corner over there. Save it. We'll get a beer. I won't say it. But I want to welcome in Representative Brian Posthumus. Brian, I'm sorry. I always said, pronounce it, dude.
Posthumus.
There you go.
Because his dad was...
Like Dumas.
I always said Posthumus. Posthumus?
That's what he said.
I'm going to call you Posse. You need a nickname, Posse.
You know what? Call me whatever you want.
Okay, Posse. You've got what'd you make of Todd? Isn't that guy he's brilliant, isn't he?
He knows his stuff, man. That's really impressive.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit happening, and I was just I called him on Holy Saturday because I was like, mm-hmm. Now, because Brian's introduced legislation, probably won't get through the Senate. But he's the face of a referendum now. It's with the Committee to Protect Voters, and it's a citizenship amendment to the state constitution. Tell us what it is, Brian.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you very much for having me on your show. I've been watching you for a long time, so I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and talk with your listeners. So first of all, like you said, we introduced a constitutional amendment into the legislature, House Joint Resolution B, which would require a few things. One, proof of citizenship when registering to vote, and two, an ID when you cast your ballot, whether that's absentee ballot or voting in person.
Okay, and that's not going to make it through. So now there's a referendum. You guys need what, 450,000 valid signatures? So you need to collect 600,000 signatures. Do not hire One Finger Freddy. This dude. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. So to your point, in order to amend the Constitution legislatively, it requires 2/3 of the House and then 2/3 of the Senate, and then it goes to the ballot for a referendum. Now, my hope is that the Democrats will join us in the House and in the Senate to help secure our election. But I'm not naive enough to think that the Democrats are actually going to help secure our elections. Right. So, I'm committed to making sure that this is on the ballot one way or another. So we took the steps to do a petition drive as well. We got approval from the Board of Canvassers, so we are gearing up to start collecting signatures. We need 450,000 valid signatures. Our goal is about 650,000 signatures in a six-month period of time.
So when's it due?
It depends on when we start, right? So you have 6 total months. It's a rolling window in order to collect the 450,000 valid signatures.
Unless you're Nestle's wife, then you get all kinds of breaks.
What's that?
Unless you're Nestle's wife, then you get all kinds of breaks.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So 90% of the people agree with this, right? Some ID at the polls. 10% don't. So I mean, it's a no-brainer, but I do have an issue. I do. Let's work this out. So my mom is 80 years old, right? She's ill. She's been married 3 times. I don't think she has a marriage license, much less her birth certificate still. She doesn't text message, doesn't have a computer, doesn't have the internet. How's my mom, her passport's expired. What do you expect my mom to do? Why can't you make it easy on my mom?
So that's it's a valid concern, right?
It's a huge concern. It's my mom.
Yeah. So first of all, has your mom voted already? Is your mom yes. already registered to vote?
Yes,
so,
she's a voter.
So it does not impact her at all, right?
Why?
So,
stop right there. Why? Why? Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. So you're saying if you're already registered to vote, you don't have to go in and re-up. We're good.
Right.
And the
right.
state will check in on us, right? A random sampling, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, so wait, look, this is huge. Everybody currently 18 and older who's registered to vote remains registered to vote. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay, yep. Big deal.
And the onus is now on the government, right? So the constitutional amendment also requires that the Secretary of State validate the citizenship of the qualified voter file. And it provides a process by which, if that citizenship cannot be verified, the Secretary of State removes that individual from the qualified voter file. So it's prospective only, and it's a one-time thing. You register to vote, you show your citizenship, that's it, you're done. You never have to prove your citizenship again. And remember, I think it's around 78% of the population in Michigan have enhanced driver's licenses. Which is proof of citizenship. And so if you are, so right there, 78% of the population is already approved. And you're going to need, I mean, Jocelyn Benson is advocating that for the enhanced driver's license anyway. She thinks it's easy to get that, but won't support the constitutional amendment.
I don't have to, my mom doesn't have to prove their citizenship. You're going to look in to see if I'm a citizen. And if we get flagged, there's an issue. I will be contacted by an intermediary, an ombudsman, something like this to clear it up, right?
Yeah, so the way that it would work is the Secretary of State would be required to utilize all of the databases that she has access to through the Department of Homeland Security, or not Homeland Security, I'm sorry, DHHS, Health and Human Services, that has birth certificates, that has marriage certificates, everything that you need. If they can't validate it that way, and then they are required to reach out to the federal government and utilize the federal government to help demonstrate that. As you probably know, President Trump issued an executive order requiring that the federal government work with the state governments for this purpose. And if it gets to that point where the state can't validate it, the federal government can't validate it, frankly, you're probably not a citizen. But in the off chance that you are, the Secretary of State is required to notify you that, hey, we can't validate your citizenship. Now you have to validate your citizenship.
Okay, go ahead.
But are we asking something of an entity in terms of accountability, in terms of transparency, in terms of efficiency that we've not seen in the past?
You mean Jocelyn Benson and her shitty way she's been handling this?
Well, I mean, you know, you think about the voter's registration card that you continue to receive
mail. Oh, yeah, there she is, Janet.
That hasn't been.
Just call me up and I'll cast it for you.
We talk about purging of the voter rolls. I mean, this is all nothing new. Do we really expect another layer of process to actually either make a difference or be enforced?
So that's a great question. I'll give you 2 points on that. Point number one, that really goes down to making sure that our citizenry is electing qualified, competent individuals that we trust with the role of the job, right? Like that a little bit of that is on the citizenry. Now, the other piece of that is we are putting in the Constitution these requirements. When it's in the Constitution, it's a lot more difficult for the Secretary of State or any other individual to skirt that. I don't know if you saw it, but I think about 2 months ago, Jocelyn Benson finally removed, I think it was 319,000 people from the qualified voter file. And it was because she couldn't skirt the law anymore. She had been putting it off for years. She finally got slapped down by the Supreme Court again. and so as a result, we were putting pressure on her with this ballot initiative. And now 319,000 people have been removed. So it's a matter of continuing to put pressure on.
Yeah, you know, what's funny too is Michigan and Georgia, for which I write and work, and James Dixon, they found out, they FOIA'd it, that when Benson was out there saying, it's really rare that, non-citizens vote, they found 15. It was actually 16 because the Chinese kid that goes to Michigan. The internal documents showed they couldn't get a database. They have the database. They couldn't run it where, okay, who's registered to vote that never showed ID? Mm-hmm. Okay. And then another subset who's registered to vote that never showed ID that actually voted and they couldn't do it. And she's out there holding press conferences telling us nothing to see here. It's complete and utter bullshit. Now, I will say this. Basically, it's the 18-year-olds are going to now have to go show their citizenship. In fact, when you get a driver's license now at 16, you probably do it, right? But it's much easier. We have computers now. Everybody that's born gets a Social Security number. Social Security number means you're a citizen. And I know we gave illegals Social Security numbers, but those are easily tracked, as you saw Doge do. So, Brian, why not just Social Security numbers and your PIN numbers, the last four digits of your social? Why not something that easy? You guys do it and send it to me in the mail. Why do I got to do any extra work? I'm a citizen.
That's a great point. Ultimately, that's where I want to go. The reality is right now, the state government, the federal government, we don't have a consolidated database accurate enough to do that. You have to work within individual databases to splice it all together.
Really?
My hope is to work with you. Frankly, yeah, that was one of the biggest surprises to me, right? It's like we are a country, and yet we do not have a unified database that determines whether somebody is or is not a citizen. That it's nuts. My hope is that I'll be able to work with immigrations or customs and immigration services to create this database that then the onus can be entirely on the government. That's the goal. And frankly, I think that's where the onus should lie. But in the meantime, we still need to ensure that only U.S. citizens are voting in our elections.
Okay, so we'll wrap it up here, man. Thanks, by the way. What's the name of this ballot initiative? You guys got one yet?
ProveItMichigan.com. So ProveItMichigan is spelled out.
Yeah. Okay. So, like I said, 9 out of 10 people are for this. France does this, for fuck's sake. Okay. So, if you're already registered to vote, you're registered to vote. They will look. I don't know if you guys are going to look into all of us or it's a random sample. I think it's probably going to be a random sample, judging by what Benson was or was not able to do. So, you won't be taken off the ballot. If you're flagged, they'll give you a call and we get it taken care of. The kids now have to prove it, but the kids now have to get an enhanced driver's license. Now, you go in with your birth certificate anyway. You're born with the Social Security number. When they write the law, they will try to build all of this stuff to make it easy going into the next century. Is that right, Bri?
100%. Look, the constitutional amendment also has a provision that like a financial hardship provision, right? So if you can't afford the documentation necessary, then state law will have to create that an avenue for you to get that citizenship documentation or driver's license at no cost to you as an individual.
Okay, that's it. Well, we're getting on an hour. I don't like to go to an hour because when people look on the internet and they're scrolling like on Twitter. Oh, it's too long. It's an hour. So see you, Bri. Good luck, man.
Thank you very much.
God bless America. See you next week. We're getting ready for that mayoral debate.
Yes, we are.
Woo! Man, we are rocking. Tucker Carlson next Wednesday.